appreciate everyone being here for this, I guess, for lack of a better term, virtual press conference. This is a little new experience for me in doing one of these virtually, but we do appreciate everyone taking time out of their afternoon to come join us. I'm Clay Pope. I'm chairman of the Oklahoma Rural and Small Town Cable of Common Interest. I'm joined today by vice chair of the organization, Mike Woods, and another officer of organization, Amy Megging. We're here today. We're an organization that's recently been formed to advocate on rural issues for the state of Oklahoma, to bring interest and awareness of issues that can impact the rural communities of our state. And quite frankly, there's not any issue that can impact our small rural communities in Oklahoma more than the issue of education and the impact that state funding can have on our schools. I think for the for all of us who understand the importance of schools and what they mean to our community, it's clear that we need to do all that we can to protect that local resource for not only educating our future generations, but for the strength and viability of our communities. And what we wanted to visit about today is a piece of legislation that's currently making its way through the state Senate that we have concerns about, House Bill 2078. It's a bill that significantly changes the state funding formula for education, and that we are concerned sets up a situation that's going to put our schools at real jeopardy as far as offering programs to students in our rural communities, and in some cases actually being able to keep their doors open as we see change, as we see economic and demographic changes take place in our state. But to talk a little bit more specifically about the impact that our schools have on our rural communities, I'd like to turn the microphone over to Mike Woods, the vice chairman of our organization. Mike is a recently retired professor from Oklahoma State University and the former chair of the Agricultural Economics Department at Oklahoma State. And Mike, if you could, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about, from your perspective, the importance that our schools do play on our rural communities and why it's so important that we have a focus on making sure that they are open and strong. Mike, if you would.
Thank you, Clay. Thanks so much. And I am really very happy to talk about the importance of our public schools to Oklahoma communities, and in particular to rural communities. There are a number of roles that we see these local schools playing. Obviously, human capital development, providing the education and the training for our young people so that they can be successful participants in our economy and to build on our state's future. That's very important. Many times these local schools, especially in rural areas, are a major source of employment. And you see a lot of individuals, sometimes spouses of others in the rural community, perhaps engaged in agriculture, for example, that are able to have through their employment in that local school, healthcare and insurance available to them. So I would say human capital development is important to rural communities. Local employment. The third area, though, Clay, that I think is particularly important as well is local quality of life, especially for rural communities in Oklahoma. The success of these schools really becomes a focal point for many communities. It's a way that a rural community has its identity and sees itself. Civic engagement, healthcare services, all of these types of activities are something that we see happening in these local schools. As I said, there's a sense of community identity. You think about key civic institutions that exist. You might think about the local fire department, you might think about the post office, but one of those key civic institutions that the community is built upon is that local public school. You lose that school, you lose property taxes, you lose property values, you lose business opportunity, because a strong local education is important for development. So, you know, just I think, Clay, for a number of reasons, it's really, really critical that we think about decisions and policy choices that impact and hopefully strengthen our schools instead of put those schools in harm's way.
Well, and to talk a little bit about the impact of 2078, especially from the perspective of an educator, I would like to turn now to Amy Megging, who's another officer with our organization, to talk a little bit about her perspective on what we're seeing and what this change could mean from her standpoint as an educator in Oklahoma. Amy?
Sorry, I forgot to unmute. Second meeting of the day. As an educator, we understand that the largest portion of the budget is the staff, whether that is certified teachers, whether that is the teaching assistants, the cafeteria workers, the bus drivers, the janitors. We need all of those people in order to keep a school functioning, in order to have our doors open for students. And when it comes to hiring, we know there's a teacher shortage with certified teachers. Oklahoma has been dealing with this for several years now. And as we have a shortage of teachers, they have to make decisions in terms of the budget of who are we going to hire next year? How many kids are we going to have in a class? Are we going to be able to have 20 kids in a class, or are we going to have 30 kids in a class? Or are we going to have high school classes with 40 kids in it? Those are decisions that have to be made based on what the money that is budgeted for that school is. And if you only have 1 year, if you have something that happens like a business that leaves your community, you suddenly have a massive drain of jobs within that community, and you're going to have a drop in students as families move. But your school district is still going to have to function, even though they've suddenly had this drop of students. And if you're only doing a yearly budget, that makes it difficult to prepare for who you're going to hire for the next year. And in terms of, say, teaching assistants, which are needed for several students, and there are many cases that we need to have teaching assistants to help out with those kids that need more one-on-one work, those teaching assistants aren't guaranteed a job the next year. But what happens if you end up with a number of students that need to have those teaching assistants working with them? Well, if you don't have the budget for it, then you can't do that. But trying to prepare for that, plus if you can't prepare and say to this person, yes, we're going to guarantee you a job next year, they're going to go find another job. And then you find out, oh, we do have the money, but you no longer have that person available to hire. And so it becomes a snowball effect on how it affects your school district. The 3-year plan that we have now gives school districts a cushion to prepare for what they have to do when they have a drop in student population and therefore a drop in the school budget. And because of that time to prepare, they're able to make plans for that. It's like, no, we're not going to be able to have these people within the next 2 years from now. We're not going to be able to pay you. We're not going to be able to have this position. And so you can make adjustments in what you're doing in your budget to be able to fulfill the needs that you need to do. And you make cuts that you need to make without having to impact students more than you absolutely have to. Because in the end, it's about impacting the students and the services that we're providing them to provide them for a quality education so that they can be successful. And so that's why it's important to have that window of those 3 years rather than trying to do a yearly budget.
Thank you, Amy. And kind of following up on that, as Amy alluded to with the legislation, that the 2078, as it said, would change the funding formula, doing away with that 3-year look back cushion that you have in budgeting and going directly to the enrollment this year or last year's median enrollment to put together the funding, the numbers for state aid coming to our schools. As someone who grew up in rural Western Oklahoma, has still children currently going to the same school that he graduated from there at Lomega. I came through the oil bust of the 1980s as a student there at Lomega grade school and high school. And I can tell you from personal experience, we had a situation when I started as a freshman, you know, we had the funding for programs like music, home economics, woodworking, some of these other programs, as well as basketball and baseball and vocational agriculture. When I graduated as a senior, we were lucky to have basketball and vocational agriculture. But I can tell you right now, if we hadn't have had the ability to have that look back where our superintendent and our school board could make the tough decisions, could balance the interest of the school to make sure that those academic opportunities were there for those of us that were enrolled at Lomega, where we could stay on a path that would get us to, say, Oklahoma State or the University of Oklahoma, while also still having the advantage of programs like athletics and vocational agriculture. If they hadn't have had that flexibility, if they hadn't have had that cushion, I wonder whether or not they could have kept the doors open at the school, let alone keeping some of the opportunities there for us. And there's other schools that didn't survive as well, and quite frankly, some programs in some neighboring schools. Again, I'll use vocational agriculture, FFA, as an example, that that they lost their FFA chapters because they couldn't make that, they couldn't make that transition work. But again, they were able in most cases to keep those doors open because they could make those hard choices. They could go through, decide what classes they had to have, do things as far as maybe getting double duty from some individuals, letting go of some support staff so that they could keep those opportunities there for students and keep those schools open. And now over time, they've been able to build back and have the strength they need to make sure that they've got those opportunities for students. Because as Mike Woods alluded to, if you lose that school, you lose the town. And we want to do things to help strengthen rural Oklahoma. But quite frankly, if you destroy the educational base of our small towns, you kill those communities and you take out any opportunity of trying to have growth in our rural areas. So we felt, as an organization that's dedicated to representing rural issues, to bringing to light issues of importance to rural Oklahoma, we felt like it was extremely important that we come out and express our concern about this legislation and let folks know that this is something that can have a major impact on our rural schools. The Bill 2078 moved out of the Senate Finance Committee this week. It will soon be coming. I believe there's a reference to A and B, but also going before the full Senate. We definitely encourage people to get a hold of their legislators, to let them know that if they do have concerns about this issue, to educate themselves on the impact that it can have in their community and make sure that we're not doing anything that's going to put our rural schools in jeopardy, and make sure that we can keep that education base out there, not just for the students enrolled in school today, but for future generations as well. With that, we'll be happy to open it up for any questions that anyone has. Again, we appreciate you being here with us. There is a press release that we'll be sending out electronically following up on this issue. And we'd be happy to open it up to any questions that you have at this time.
Mr. Pope, hi, can you hear me? This is Andrea Eager from the Tulsa World newspaper.
Yes.
I just wondered about, what you've learned about the unintended consequences of House Bill 2078 on rural Oklahoma. I believe one of the sponsors of the bill is a rural legislator, for example. Do you believe it's an unintended consequence or that they're missing something? How is it that this could negatively impact rural school districts? And yet it appears that there's quite a bit of support for this change in the funding formula.
Well, I don't have a window into anyone's soul, so I can't really tell you as to what someone's motivation is or not. I would hope anyone that is representing rural Oklahoma, especially when there's been such strong opposition from organizations like the School Boards Association, the Rural Schools Association, educators across state, the administrators have all expressed concerns about this, that there would be some understanding that the individuals who have to deal with these issues year in and year out would have a good feel for the potential impact. And quite frankly, a lot of folks didn't live through the oil bust like some of us have. It's sometimes looking back and having that historical perspective can help a little bit. So I'm not here to question someone's motives, but I do think there's clearly potential consequences that maybe not this year, maybe not next year. But as we move forward, we continue to see economic changes. When you live in an area like rural Oklahoma, where the energy industry especially can have such a huge impact on boom and bust, when we see the impact on agriculture, we've seen those demographic trends. It's clear that this sets up a situation that I feel like, there needs to be more thought given to, because this is, when you talk to the individuals especially who've worked with this issue for decades, that this is not a direction we need to move in, that we are setting ourselves up for some real problems in the future. And Amy or Mike, do either one of you want to add to that at all?
Well, I'm just going to say, we have to think about the long term. When what he's talking about when jobs move, and I will say I teach in Ponca City, and anyone in Oklahoma knows that when Conoco moved jobs several years ago, it majorly affected this community, not just the school, but it affected the churches. When you have a major job loss, that's what happens. But then you sometimes end up with this inflow. Wind power up here is massive. And we've had families that move in for 6 months to a year. And so that changes the number of students that we have. There's fluctuations. That happens in the short term. And this yearly budget thing is a short term. But we have to think about the fact that we're teaching children from kindergarten clear to their senior year in high school. So we have to plan for the long term of these children and how their families move and how they fluctuate. Our communities in our country today are very mobile. We have fluctuations. This happens all of the time. And we have to change and adapt to that. And we do that. But by affecting the budget in a yearly basis, we can't do some of the long-term planning that we need to do. And that's why the Oklahoma School Board Association has come out against this, because we need to be able to think in the long term. What are we going to do this year, the next year, and the next year? And frankly, we're also thinking probably about 5 or 10 years ahead in our planning, because we have to think that way because of how long we teach these children and how long they're going to be under our care, because a lot of them will go from kindergarten or pre-K until their senior year with one school district. And so we want to continue to be able to provide all the services that we need to provide. And we want to be able to, we know when the changes happen. We know that's going to affect our budget, but we need to make adjustments. And you know, this sounds absolutely crazy, but a simple thing our district did several years ago was when we go on holidays for Christmas or spring break or summer, we unplug every single device in our building, because that saves money when we disconnect every single device. But that savings that we were able to do meant that we were able to provide other services that we needed for students. And so that's what we're looking at. We need that 3-year plan that we've been going with, because it gives us the ability to plan ahead.
And Clay, I would just add, and I'm going to echo what Amy and Clay have said. Clay mentioned the boom bust cycle that many of us are quite familiar with in Oklahoma. And if you've been through a severe boom bust cycle, you know that it's really hard to make those types of adjustments overnight. And so good sound planning for all of the students that might be in a local school district is really important. I did have the pleasure of serving a 5-year term on the local school board here in Stillwater. Now, we never through that time did not deal with declining enrollment, but we needed that planning tool dealing with increasing enrollment. And so I think it is a very important planning tool to have the funding formula the way it's currently set up. And so I would just echo what Clay says about boom bust cycles and the vulnerability that rural communities have. And then I think Amy's point about having these students, even in a declining enrollment school district, students that we care about and that we want their future to be strong and supportive as well. So having a mechanism in place so that administrators and local school boards can deal with whatever's happening in their local economy.
We appreciate you taking your time out of your day joining us, and appreciate you covering this issue and helping us get the word out about our concerns as we move forward on this issue affecting education in Oklahoma. So with that, on behalf of Mike and Amy and the rest of us with the Rural Roundtable of Interest, we appreciate you all joining us today. Thank you and have a great day.